So glad to have you all here. It's a wonderful thing what an extra hour of sleep can do. For those of you who are visiting, we've got several today. We're proud that you're with us, and we've been blessed the last several weeks with lots of visitors and several of you returning, and we're just glad that you're with us today. We're going to continue on our Sermon on the Mount, the teachings of Jesus. We began 2 weeks ago discussing Jesus' teaching about murder and anger. And we talked about the preciousness of life. And now we want to talk about this deepening of the law that Jesus does in the Sermon on the Mount. As he talks about not only what the law says, but behind that, what did God intend? What did God mean? He deepens that teaching. Give you a little bit of a historical background. We'll take a little thought trail together. For the audience of the first century who would have heard this, especially those who were teachers of the law, how this would have come across, because it's probably very different for you and me than it would have been for them. Jesus, as he teaches, and you will remember that the discussion, even as recorded for us in the scripture, is that Jesus didn't teach like the other people, but he taught as one having authority. Remember that? As one having authority. They are used to rabbis arguing and discussing and having different opinions. But Jesus, as he teaches, is taking the law that Moses gave and really expanding on that. And I think the proper term is deepening that. Going behind the law and saying, what is God's intent? Now, the reason that is interesting, and you have to think, for those Jewish people of the first century and prior to that, Moses is the great deliverer, the great lawgiver, right? This is the law of Moses. It is Moses who penned the law, the first five books of the Bible, on which knowledge of God and faith is built. He carries out the law that was the promises that were made to Abraham. And so as Jesus says this, not only is there this theological discussion that's going on, this religious discussion that's going on, but there is a thought has to be for them to say, who is this man that challenges Moses? Who is this man who thinks he is greater than Moses? And so they would have to wrestle with that. And so in doing that, you kind of come to one of a couple of conclusions. Either this man is the Christ, the Messiah, the one that prophecy has talked about and that we have waited on, or this man really is a heretic. And that's a discussion going on in the background. And we realize that most of the religious leaders at the time, what decision did they make? That Jesus is a radical, right? That's why they want to put him to death. That's why they arrest him. That's why they want to persecute him, and why Jesus goes back to Galilee, and why when he goes back into Jerusalem, his disciples say, why are you going back to the temple? Why are you going back to Jerusalem? Don't you know they're looking for you? Because Jesus' teachings challenged them. They were different. Jesus said, I'm not abolishing. It's what some of you have challenged me, and I'm not changing. I'm just fulfilling. Just saying, what I'm teaching you is the fullness of the law of Moses. This is God's intent. And Jesus' message is, this is what the kingdom is like. This is what the kingdom is like. The kingdom is passing by. You have an invitation to be a part of the kingdom. And this is what the kingdom is like, and this is how citizens of the kingdom live. It is an insight from above, because Jesus is from God. And you remember we talked about this some weeks ago. And it is an insight from beyond. Now what does that mean? It is Jesus saying, when the kingdom is completed in its fullness, when Jesus makes everything right, this is how people live. This is what the kingdom looks like. And as people of the kingdom, what are we striving to do? Live godly lives today. We're part of the kingdom, doing God's will on earth as it's done in heaven. And so I want to read from William Barclay's commentary. I'm not going to read Barclay's thoughts, but I want to read the translation he makes of Matthew. You have heard that it was said to the people of the old days, "You shall not kill, and whoever kills is liable to the judgment court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother is liable to the judgment court. And the one who says to his brother, 'You brainless one,' is liable to the judgment in the Supreme Court. And he who says to his brother, 'You fool,' is liable to be cast into the Gehenna of fire." So Jesus said, you've been taught, we all know, that you don't murder. That you don't take someone's life. Now, obviously murder is different. He's translated it killing. But we talked 2 weeks ago about the cities of refuge where if someone was killed by accident without malice, some accident occurs, that this person could go there and be safe. They were not freed from judgment, but if they were not guilty, they were protected from vengeance. But he's talking here about you've been taught that you don't kill somebody. You don't get angry and kill somebody. And then he begins to address, not only do you not kill them, but God's intention is that we don't become angry with each other. That we don't become angry. Not only do we not act out on our anger, but we don't become angry. Because as Paul read for us, anger does not bring about what God desires in us. That anger is detrimental. And we read a couple of weeks ago, for those of you who weren't with us, we talked about Cain and Abel, which is the first murder in the Bible. And did y'all look? I said there were two in the chapter. Did you go look and see the second one? Got some nodding your head that you did? There are two in that chapter. But why is there murder among the sons of Adam and Eve? Because of jealousy and anger. That's why one brother murders his other. And so Jesus says, as he deepens the teaching of Moses, not only do you not murder, but you don't become angry. And the term in the Greek, which I am not a scholar, but reading the scholars, is that you don't have that anger that grows. You know, there is an anger that flashes up. We lose a little control. We shouldn't have that anger. But the word is one that we feed, that grows, that becomes a part of us, that we can't let go, that festers, that we feed, that changes even our nature, that we don't become angry with our brother. Because there's another underlying principle that we're going to talk about later in this lesson that we need to remember. And that is, if you do not love your brother whom you have seen, it is impossible to love God whom you have not seen. That if we can't make relationships right with our brethren, we can't have a right relationship with God. And so the relationships we have are important, and the needing and the understanding for forgiveness. So Jesus says, not only do we not kill each other, but we don't become angry. And then he says, most of the translation, at least some of the translation, don't say to your brother, "Raca." And that really is probably a term that, when we literally translate it, kind of loses some of its meaning, because it would have been a term that they would have understood, and it kind of has a guttural sound to it, and it's an insult that one would make against another one, and you would know it when you hear it. Because Jesus is going on now and giving some examples. Not only do we not murder, but we fight the anger, and you don't go and call your brother a brainless imbecile in an ugly, guttural, visceral type way. That we don't insult each other. That's important. Jesus said, we don't murder, we don't become angry, and we don't insult each other. Because just as murder would bring one before the courts, Jesus says, so should one who insults his brother. And then he says, anyone who says to his brother, "You fool," You fool. Now, I grew up with Fred Sanford, and he called people fish-eyed fools. You remember that? And we might use that term, that's foolish, or you're a fool. But what Jesus is saying here, you will remember that David in the Psalms says that the man who says there is no God is a fool. And so when we malign someone's integrity and their character, when we bring about character assassination, when we talk about their very integrity, their very nature, we shouldn't insult them. And we shouldn't certainly carry that further where I might not murder you, but I have certainly murdered your reputation. I have said things about you that you're ungodly, that your character is so bad you don't even recognize there's a God, that you have no moral compass, no character. And so Jesus said, you've heard one said to the court, but if you say to your brother, you brainless, when you insult your brother, you're in danger of going to the Supreme Court, from General Sessions to the Supreme Court. But Jesus says, when you assassinate the character of your neighbor, you're in danger of the Gehenna of fire. Some translations will translate that to what term? Hell. Hell, that is translated. But Barclay chose to say Gehenna, which is the term. Where does that come from? Because it has a history. And it certainly had a history in the first century because it takes on the very nature of hell itself. Paul and Houston and I have been to hell twice and back. It is a valley on the southern side of Jerusalem that got its first terrible reputation when Ahaz began worship to Molech in the valley of the sons of Ben-Hinnom, Gehenna. And do you remember what was part of the worship to Molech? Molech was a statue, a god whose arms came out like this. They would build fires under them till they would become red hot and they would sacrifice children on the arms of the god Molech. And so that abomination came to Jerusalem, and it was Josiah, the boy king, who, remember when they're redoing the temple, gets the law, who destroys the worship of Molech in the valley of Gehenna. But it always had a curse about it. Always had a curse about it. And it became, because so many bad things happened there, that it became the trash dump of Jerusalem. And so they were always burning trash and refuse, so there was always smoke. It was unclean. It was trashy. There were abominations who went there. So it takes on the very nature of what is evil and nasty and unclean. And the fires burn there continuously where refuse is destroyed. And so Jesus is saying, we all know that we couldn't kill each other. But we also should know that we don't become angry with our brothers, that we fight anger, and that we don't insult them, and we certainly do not assassinate their character, because all of those bring about God's judgment. That's not what God desires for us. It's challenging, isn't it? For most of us coming in today, thou shalt not murder wasn't all that difficult. But when Jesus says, not only should we not murder, but we shouldn't become angry, we shouldn't even desire bad things for our brothers or for others. Because how many folks have said, I didn't kill them, but I ain't sorry they're gone. Because it was somebody they disliked or whatever. But just then, we shouldn't have that kind of anger. We should have forgiveness. We certainly should not be insulting. And then he goes on and gives some examples. So then, if you bring your gift to the altar, and if you there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go first and be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Why would they offer sacrifice? There were multiple reasons, but mainly sacrifice was about the atonement for sin, right? For the atonement for sin. Day of Atonement would be a sacrifice for the nation, and one would come and bring sacrifice and actually would lay their hands on the animal to be sacrificed kind of as a transference of sin. You ever heard the term, that person was just a scapegoat? You know where that term comes from? Comes from the Scripture. Because they would take a goat and they would, the priest would put their hands on the goat and would it would be like a transfer. It was symbolically that this goat has the sins of the people. And then they would send the goat back away from the city. And you want to make sure the goat didn't come back. You know, you didn't want to bring in the sins back. And that there was sacrifice that was offered. But what Jesus is saying to them, when you come to ask for forgiveness and to reconcile your relationship with God, because what does sin do? Sin separates us from God, doesn't it? And so Jesus is saying to them, if you're coming to make things right with God, and you remember, recognize, acknowledge, or it comes to mind that you know that there's a problem with a brother, leave your sacrifice at the altar, go make things right, and then come back and make your sacrifice. What Jesus is saying in a very literal sense there is you can't make things right with God if things aren't right with your brother. You can't come make sacrifice asking for forgiveness and reconciliation when you're not about forgiveness and reconciliation. When you're not forgiving and kind, when there is a problem between you and a brother, and you don't work to make that right, how can you make things right with the Father? And so, Jesus will tell us specifically, if we've got aught with a brother, what are we supposed to do? Go to them, right? That doesn't work. We take witnesses, may have to take it before the church, but we try to work things out with our neighbors and with our brothers, so that our relationships are right. Because in the kingdom, God's people do what? They work on forgiveness and love and right relationships. That's what the kingdom is like. That's what the kingdom is about, being right in our relationships. Not only is the kingdom a place where we don't murder each other, but it's a place where we don't harbor anger and insult, and where we reconcile relationships, where we make things right with each other. I know what the teaching of Jesus does for me, and hopefully for all of us. It's a humbling thing, isn't it? Because one might, with some arrogance, say, I'm certainly not a murderer. But it's much harder to say that I am kind and forgiving and not angry, that I'm always reconciling relationships. It is a much more difficult thing to do, to make things right with our brothers, to work those things out. As much as it is up to us, we should be at peace with all men. Jesus gives one more example. Get on good terms with your opponent while you are still on the road with him, in case your opponent hands you over to the judge, and the judge hands you over to the court officer, and you be cast into prison. This is the truth, I tell you, that if that happens, you will certainly not come out until you have paid the last farthing. I like the English translations, farthings. Till you've paid the last penny. Till you've paid the last dime. So, Jesus gives an example of two folks going to court. Obviously, one is a debtor to the other. And his instruction is, even as you're on the way to court, work it out. Get things right. Because what happens if it goes to court? What happens if you don't get things right? Well, once it goes to court, you lose control, right? Someone else makes the decision. I'm a part of Leadership Rutherford this year. I'm enjoying that. we have to do some visits to different places. So I went to it was a juvenile court the other day. I've shared this with you. But it's interesting because they were bringing these juveniles, and it was a decision whether are they going home or are they going to stay for a few more days. And guess what? The judge make the decision. You know, you've got your advocate. The district attorney's there. You can have your attorney. But at the end of the day, what happens? What the judge says goes. We like kind of being independent. But either you're going to get bonded out in a few minutes, or take them back, you're going to stay with me for a while. And Jesus says, and just talking about making sure that relationships are right, even with your adversary, if you owe them, get it worked out, because when the judge becomes involved, all of a sudden things are different. You're going to pay every dime. Maybe there's even a greater lesson in this. It's that the Lord's going to return, and there'll be a judgment. And if we're not right in our relationships, God's going to hold us into account for that. Jesus is saying, make things right. Why are you on it? Because we're about our way now, right? And make things right. Be right with one another. You've heard it said, you know, we don't kill each other. I'm sure glad that Halloween is over, because on television for the last month, everything is about somebody getting killed, right? Whew! Yeah, some of you are shaking your head because it's like, man, I don't need it. Some of you enjoy it. I can tell by the way you're nodding your head. I've been watching. I don't like those movies. But we know there's a fear that comes with that. We all know that we don't take another person's life. But Jesus, in telling us how it is to be citizens of the kingdom, says not only do we not take another's life, but we don't carry that anger in us. That we reconcile relationships. That we make things right with each other. That not only would we not kill, but we don't insult. We don't assassinate others' character. But we do that that's right. And that we do what God has called us to do, to be forgiving people. You've heard it said not that you don't kill. But I'm telling you, you don't even be angry. Because anger does not bring about what God would have us to do. And so it's the teaching of the New Testament. Put away anger and wrath and malice. Because none of those things lead to righteousness, to godly living. And be patient and kind and loving and forgiving of each other, and reconcile relationships. Jesus tells a parable about a man who owed the king a significantly large sum of money. A sum of money for which he could not pay. There was no way he could come up with funds to repay it. But the king forgave him his debt. And he went out, and there was a fellow servant who owed him just a few days' wages. And he said to that servant, pay me now. And if you don't pay me, I'm going to put you and your whole family in prison until I get paid. And then the other servants told the king, and you remember the king's anger. But we can understand that, because the king said, I forgave you a debt that was unforgivable, unpayable. And yet you couldn't forgive your brother. God, at the cost of his son, forgave a debt that you and I could never repay. And so he says, you need to be loving and forgiving and not angry with your brothers when there are issues between you that are certainly much smaller than I have forgiven you. Citizens of the kingdom, not only we're not about murder, but we're about forgiveness and love of each other. We can love because God first loved us. If you need to respond to the love of God, would you come while we stand and sing?